Spring, 1935.
Heartsick.
The hard part is, in spite of everything, if I had any boy court me, it'd be Mad Dog Craddock. But Mad Dog can have any girl. Why would he want me? I'm so restless. My father asks what's going on with me. I storm up to my room, leaving him alone standing in the kitchen. If Ma was here, she would come up and listen. And then later, she would curl beside my father and assure him that everything was all right and soothe him into his farmer's sleep. My father and I, we can't soothe each other. I'm too young, he's too old, and we don't know how to talk anymore, if we ever did. April, 1935. Skin. My father has a raised spot on the side of his nose that never was there before and won't go away. And there's another on his cheek and two more on his neck. And I wonder, why the heck is he fooling around? He knows what it is. His father had those spots, too. April, 1935. Regrets. I never go by Arlie's anymore. Still, every week he comes to school to teach, and sometimes I bump into Vera, or Miller Rice, or Mad Dog. They're always kind. They ask after my father. They ask how my hands are feeling. I cross my arms in front of me tight so my scars won't show. These days, Mad Dog looks at me halfway between picking a fight and kindness. He walks with me away some afternoons, never says a word. He's quiet once the other girls go off. I've had enough of quiet men. I ought to keep clear of Mad Dog, but I don't. April, 1935. Fire on the rails. I hate fire. Hate it. But the entire Oklahoma panhandle is so dry, everything is going up in flames. Everything too ready to ignite. Last week, the school caught fire. Damage was light on account of it being caught early. Most kids joked about it next day, but it terrified me. I could hardly go back in the building. And this week, 3 boxcars in the train yard burned to ash. Jim Goen and Harry Kessler spotted the fire, and that was a miracle considering the fierceness of the dust storm at the time. The fire boys tore over, but they couldn't put the blaze out without water, and water is exactly what they didn't have. So they separated the burning cars and moved them down a siding, away from any little thing that might catch if the flames hopped. It was all they talked about at school. The dust blew, they say, so you'd think it would have smothered the fire out. But the flames, crazy in the wind, licked away at the wooden frames of the 3 boxcars until nothing remained but warped metal and twisted rails, scorched dirt and charred ties. No one talks about fire right to my face. They can't forget how fire changed my life. But I hear them talking anyway. April, 1935. The mail train. They promised through rain, heat, snow and gloom, but they never said anything about dust. And so the mail got stuck, for hours, for days on the Santa Fe, because mountains of dust had blown over the tracks, because blizzards of dust blocked the way. And all that time, as the dust beat down on the cars, a letter was waiting inside a mailbag. A letter from Ann Ellis, my father's sister, written just to me, inviting me to live with her in Lubbock. I want to get out of here, but not to Ann Ellis and not to Lubbock, Texas. My father didn't say much when I asked what I should do. Let's wait and see, he said. What's that supposed to mean? April, 1935. Migrants. We'll be back when the rain comes, they say, pulling away with all they own, straining the springs of their motor cars. Don't forget us. And so they go, fleeing the blowing dust, fleeing the fields of brown-tipped wheat, barely ankle-high, and sparse as the hair on a dog's belly. We'll be back, they say, pulling away toward Texas, Arkansas, where they can rent a farm, pull in enough cash, maybe start again. We'll be back when it rains, they say, setting out with their bedsprings and mattresses, their cook stoves and dishes, their kitchen tables, and their milk goats, tied to their running boards in rickety cages, setting out for California, where even though they say they'll come back, they just might stay if what they hear about that place is true. Don't forget us, they say. But there are so many leaving. How can I remember them all? April, 1935. Blankets of Black. On the first clear day, we staggered out of our caves of dust into the sunlight, turning our faces to the big blue sky. On the second clear day, we believed the worst was over at last. We flocked outside, trading in town, going to stores and coming out, only to find the air still clear and gentle, grateful for each easy breath. On the third clear day, summer came in April, and the churches opened their arms to all comers, and all comers came. After church, folks headed for picnics, car trips. No one could stay inside. My father and I argued about the funeral of Grandma Lucas, who truly was no relation. But we ended up going anyway, driving down the road in a procession to Texoma. 6 miles out of town, the air turned cold. Birds beat their wings everywhere you looked, whole flocks dropping out of the sky, crowding on fence posts. I was sulking in the truck beside my father when heaven's shadow crept across the plains, a black cloud, big and silent as Montana, boiling on the horizon and barreling toward us. More birds tumbled from the sky, frantically keeping ahead of the dust. We watched as the storm swallowed the light. The sky turned from blue to black, night descended in an instant, and the dust was on us. The wind screamed. The blowing dirt ran so thick I couldn't see the brim of my hat as we plunged from the truck, fleeing. The dust swarmed like it had never swarmed before. My father groped for my hand, pulled me away from the truck. We ran, a blind pitching toward the shelter of a small house, almost invisible, our hands tight together, running toward the ghostly door, pounding on it with desperation. A woman opened her home to us, all of us, not just me and my father, but the entire funeral procession, and one after another we tumbled inside, gasping, our lungs burning for want of air. All the lamps were lit against the dark. The house, dazed by dust, gazed weakly out. The walls shook in the howling wind. We helped tack up sheets on the windows and doors to keep the dust down. Cars and trucks, unable to go on, their ignitions shorted out by the static electricity, opened up and let out more passengers who stumbled for shelter. One family came in clutched together, their paw divining the path with a long wooden rod. If it hadn't been for the company, this storm would have broken us completely, broken us more thoroughly than the plow had broken the Oklahoma sod, more thoroughly than my burns had broken the ease of my hands. But for the sake of the crowd and the hospitality of the home that sheltered us, we held on and waited, sitting or standing, breathing through wet cloths, as the fog of dust filled the room and settled slowly over us. When it let up a bit, some went on to bury Grandma Lucas, but my father and I, we cleaned the thick layer of grime off the truck, pulled out of the procession and headed on home, creeping slowly along the dust-mounded road. When we got back, we found the barn half covered in dunes. I couldn't tell which rise of dust was Ma and Franklin's grave. The front door hung open, blown in by the wind. Dust lay 2 feet deep in ripply waves across the parlor floor. Dust blanketed the cook stove, the ice box, the kitchen chairs, everything deep in dust. And the piano, buried in dust. While I started to shovel, my father went out to the barn. He came back, and when I asked, he said, the animals weren't good, and the tractor was dusted out, and I said, it's a wonder the truck got us home. I should have held my tongue. When he tried starting the truck again, it wouldn't turn over. April, 1935.